Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Shanti Nani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pujani Nirvishesha Srimivani Pashtati Vashtani Panchako Pudruti Chakravasindho Vyevaja Pita Nam Padani Vyo Vaishnavi Vyo Namo Namo. His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was a very dear disciple of Srila Prabhupada and a very bold devotee in presenting the message of Krishna and spreading the message of Krishna. I remember one time we were at the Rath Yatra procession in Paris, in France, and just when the procession was about to begin, everyone was gathered, everything was set, and the heavens opened up and rain just started pouring. Just huge torrents of rain began pouring upon everyone. And Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj just began to dance. He had that tambourine kind of thing. He began dancing, and if he'd been dancing, you know, like 10% or something, when the rain started, then it was like 60%. And the rain was just so heavy that I was just thinking, you know, how do I get out of here? Can I be on the side under the canopies, you know, by the where the stores are? And Marge was just dancing down the middle of the street. Like a wild man, just dancing and dancing. He was the whole festival, just kept everybody going, chanting and dancing, and then all the way down the whole route, and then finally we got to the end, and the rain stopped, and we had a great festival. So he was always bold. He wasn't limited to small thinking. He was not limited to conventional approaches of doing things. He would always think, what's the best way to get across the message of Krishna? He would think deeply about the message, think deeply about the philosophy, think deeply about what devotional service to Krishna is, and then he would think very carefully, what's the best way to get this message across? What should I say? How should I do it? And he was always wonderful in his approach. When I first met him in New York City, and then not so long afterwards, he joined what we call the library party. There was a van full of devotees who were going from library to library to library in America, presenting Prabhupada's books to the professors and taking orders for Prabhupada's books. And Prabhupada was hugely pleased by these efforts. And he used to dress in a suit and tie like a regular salesman, and he would know exactly what to say. You know, the professor such and such, as we just saw him and he took this book, and he, because he knew that this professor studied under that professor, he would just know what to say. And he was a little psychic also. They would be traveling and it would be a weekend. Weekend means nobody would be there at the university. But he'd say, no, anyway, let's go there. And they would go to the university, and there'd be like one professor that they would have to see. He would be the person who could endorse the book and put in order. And Marge would say, anyway, let's go there. They would go there and the university would be deserted, but Maharaj would see one person at the water fountain. He'd say, I think that must be him. And it would be him. And Maharaj would, you know, we came here to see you and we brought these books, and he'd get the order. Now things, all these extraordinary things would happen to him. Later he went to the Jagannath Temple in India, in Puri, And Jagannath Temple, they're very strict. If you're not an Indian, they don't let you in. If you're not a Hindu, they don't let you in. They wouldn't let the Prime Minister of India, Mrs. Indira Gandhi, they refused her entrance because she was married to a non-Hindu. They're so picky and sticky. So Maharaj thought that if I go in dressed like this, try to get in, forget it. They won't let me in. So he dressed up in a suit and tie, and then when the guards were there, like, you know, what are you? Where are you? What's your story? He said, well, I was born in an Indian family, but I was raised in Kenya, and I never knew my culture. You know, I'm out of touch with my culture. It's my misfortune. And so the priests were like sympathetic. But here's this nice Hindu boy. But he was raised in Kenya. So they brought him into the temple, like escorted him right into the temple, brought him right up to the Jagannath deity, right up to the altar, placed his arms around the deity. I mean, just, you know, the maximum that you could possibly get. The maximum you could possibly get. That was, Krishna would favor him in so many different ways. In fact, his name was John Favors. That was his name before he joined. And Krishna favored him. He went to Princeton University, which was one of the very best universities in America. He was a political activist and so on. But then when he came in touch with the message of Srila Prabhupada, as he mentions, he got this Isha Upanishad, and then he was finished. Then he joined and dedicated himself to Prabhupada's service. And later he went traveling in, after the library party had pretty much covered America, they went to Europe and to the communist countries, where again, you know, everything was like, how do you sell books about Krishna in countries where God is not welcome? But there also he was successful, presenting the books as a cultural, cultural literature and so on, and then getting good reviews and getting good orders for the books. And again, Prabhupada was so much pleased. So that when Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj came to see Srila Prabhupada in Vrindavan in Prabhupada's last days, Prabhupada was rubbing his head. You're the most pure, you're the most pure, you're the most pure. Prabhupada was so pleased by his devotional service. Maharaj later came to Africa. As you see, he was addressing big crowds here in South Africa. And he was also preaching in other parts. He was preaching in West Africa, in Ghana, in Ivory Coast, in Nigeria, in Togo, so many different countries. Sometimes a little dangerous also, because Maharaj used to go for the top. He was bold, so he would try to reach the top people. In America, he became friends with Muhammad Ali, the heavyweight champion of the world. That also was bold. He thought, how am I going to get in to see this man? So he rented a big limousine, you know. And then they let him right through, because with such a big limousine, he's got to be somebody. Well, that way he met Muhammad Ali on many occasions, and they were friendly. And Maharaj would meet big people in Africa also. He would make friends with chiefs. We have big temples in West Africa that the chiefs donated to Maharaj to use for temples. And he would meet the top people in the government also and become close to them. That was a dangerous game, because if you were close to the top people, one day the guy's the top man, and the next day he's been overthrown, and anyone who's connected with him gets shot. Right? I mean, literally. So, sort of, you had to be quick to be on the right side at the right time. But Maharaj was always like that, going for substantial gains, trying to reach substantial people, trying to reach as many people as possible, and presenting the message of Krishna very appropriately for the time and the context, very appropriately for the people, in such a way that people would understand and people would become attracted. Sometimes, I remember in Washington, D.C., Washington, D.C. has a big African-American population, right on Capitol Hill, actually. Just the Congress is here, and then there's a whole large area, mostly African-Americans. Maharaj set up shop there. He rented a house to preach to the people there, and especially to the professional people, you know, doctors, African-American doctors and lawyers and, you know, highly qualified people. And the whole house, I went to visit him one time, and the whole theme of the house was very African, not Indian at all. You'd have no inkling that this philosophy or these books had anything to do whatsoever with India. The decor was African, the art was African, everything was African, but the teachings were Krishna consciousness. And people were joining, people were taking part, and it would be like sometimes years before they'd know that there was an international society for Krishna consciousness. They were just connected with Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj and with Krishna and with the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Then when they were really already devotees of Krishna, then if you would introduce to them, there's also a society, there's also other people doing this. But he would specifically think how to reach these people, how to bring these people to Krishna. And he got so many nice devotees who joined. One of them, Brajalila Dasi, was a highly qualified lady, and she became one of our leading devotees for spreading Krishna consciousness in West Africa. Now she's back in America. And so many other devotees that Maharaj made, Sri Vasprabhu and Kama. Wonderful devotees, capable, intelligent, and carrying on the mission that Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj undertook. So, I don't want to speak long about it. But we can take inspiration. Sometimes I think that what's really valuable in a religious institution is not so much the buildings or the carefully worked out ways of doing things or the government of the institution or the officers or the hierarchy. It's the saintly people who are in that institution. They're actually what make the institution or the organization worthwhile. It's just if you get one saintly person there, one pure devotee of Krishna, that's what gives substance to the whole thing. Otherwise you have buildings, you have this, you have that. But if you don't have a saintly person, it's architecture. So Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was such a saintly person that he's an inspiration for all of us in the Krishna consciousness movement. And especially he can serve as a source of inspiration for those of us who are here in Africa. We can take his example, we can take his sincere desire he had for people to have the benefit of becoming connected with Krishna. We can remember his example of reading these books and thinking deeply about the message of these books and thinking of how to spread them to others. Hare Krishna. Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj Ki Jai.
Shrimati Bhakti Viranda Swami Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gurvan Pacharanini Nirvisesha Sunavadi Pasita Satisha Charan Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhuntananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vishwad Guru Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Krishna. So today is a very important day. Of course, I didn't expect to be here. It just took me by surprise to hear that today we're going to be celebrating Maharaj's Vyasa Puja in Lazi. Yes, and it just reminded me of the old days in the 90s when Maharaj first came here. At that time, it was just the dawning of the so-called New South Africa. So when I was in London, I was asked to come back to this, you know, so-called sunrise. I came here, and then the year after, Maharaj also came. Actually, we invited him to come. Shuddha Keti, Prabhu and myself, so then Maharaj came, and shortly after that, President Mandela came to the temple, so he was there. So he had come before in 1985. I was just coming to ISKCON those days. He came for the opening of the temple. At that time, things were quite tough in South Africa. And then he was sort of like brought into the country through the Transkei. In those days, they had different countries which were homelands. So then from the Transkei, someone drove him to Durban because he couldn't just come directly. So then, but when he came in 94, it was direct and it was very nice. So as Maharaj was explaining how every society is not dependent on, you know, the nice buildings and the systems of government, but it's dependent upon the purity or the saintliness of its members. I thought that was the point that impressed me the most, because Bhakti